96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure. We will be sure. Oh, glory, 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 oh, glory, glory.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground. The camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day.
Good morning. Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You know my voice already. It's Levin Miller. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for letting me join you. I don't have a clue what it is that you do at 11, but whatever it is you do, I am happy that you're doing that do and that you have decided to do that do with me. It's Tuesday, and aside from it being one of my favorite days of the week, it's the day that I get to carry on in the series that I'm calling Pregnant in the Pandemic. And last week you heard an absolutely heartwarming story of an instance where a young Bahamian mother goes into the primary medical facility of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, leaves with a child that is being overtaken by bilirubin, only to a short while later have that child readmitted to that hospital and to have succumbed from that episode, right? And I mean, I cannot begin to tell you how many people have reached out to me and have confessed that that story left them in absolute tears. And you know where I sit on it. If you live in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, there are so many, although this is the place that God lives, and maybe this is in the same vein as what's going on now with little Bella, there are so many things that do not function, so many things that cause great frustration, that when we see them, you know, I am often hard-pressed to understand how do the people that live in this country and do not cuss or drink make it? Because sometimes you kind of need an amalgamation of the cussing and the drinking to cope with what we call the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. However, there are some of us that will seek to be refugees in another place and will go on and try to become citizens of another place, but some of us will have to stay. A great orator once said, who can afford to run will run, but what about those who can't? They will have to stay. Buju Bantan, that was. And so there are some of us that cannot run, that will not run. Some of us will not shirk our responsibility. This is our Commonwealth. We must build it. And for all intents and purposes, with as many failures as it has, it is ours. And unless the people of the place build the place for the people, right, then what would we have? Absolutely nothing. It would all just, you know, go to rot. And the Bahamas will cease to exist and we will all be no more. I don't know what we will be, but certainly not Bahamians. And that is why, even when it is bitter and ugly and dark, that is why, even when the stories are so sad that we find ourselves lamenting, we must decide that in our darkest hour, we, the people of this country, will give to her all that we have. And when they mark the manner of our bearing 1,000 years from today, hopefully history reflects that the men and women that lived through this dispensation of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas was the best and brightest this country had ever seen. That is the one thing that gives me great hope and good assurance that for as long as I can, And this ought to be the creed of us all. For as long as we can, we must build a better Bahamas. All right? And so, for whatever it is worth, I don't even know where that came from, but I see it all happening around me. I hear the travesty surrounding the young little Bella. I mean, you cannot imagine you live in that kind of society, but that is one of the dysfunctions in the massively dysfunctional place we call home. And so we've got to fix it. We've got to stopgap, amend, and make the necessary adjustments so that the grandchildren of our grandchildren do not know the Bahamas that we know today. So that the grandchildren of our grandchildren do not live in a Bahamas where sexual offense or sexual abuse has such a high ranking. So that the grandchildren of our grandchildren do not live in a Bahamas where the murder rate exceeds 100 every year. So that the grandchildren of our grandchildren lives in a stable economy where the GDP isn't at 100% and roadways aren't crumbling beneath their feet. The onus is upon us to ensure that is the Bahamas, whether we inherited it or not, it is certainly the one we leave. All right? Now that I got that out of my chest, I've got in studio with me today a guest. Her story is completely different from my guest last week, who was in studio with me. And I think you remember the story well enough. And so I don't want to overtalk that because I imagine there's still a very soft spot in the hearts of the people that are actually dealing with it. Plus, there may also be some litigation. I'm not sure. We will see. Notwithstanding that, though, for whatever it is worth among the dysfunction, I still have hope. And some people will say, well, of course, if you're spending your money, if you're spending your money, what do you expect? So my guest today, Ms. Shikara Moxie, she is with me. Her story is entirely different, right? Of course, her story is different first and foremost because she went to the other medical institution in the Bahamas. And people will say, well, then that is the reason for the outcome. But the point I'm making, hopefully, and the point that you all grasp throughout this series, is that all is in loss. And at least Doctors Hospital weekend, right? Worst case scenario, pay your $300 a month for medical insurance. And when something happened to you, you go to Doctors Hospital. So, Ms. Moxie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. So I'm so happy that you're here. Let me firstly say that.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. You have recently had your second child.
Yes.
Your second child.
6 weeks today.
6 weeks today. Bless the Lord.
Hallelujah.
And I mean, the world has been a very uncertain place for the last 18 months.
Definitely.
The fact that you had a baby 6 weeks ago means that, I mean, I'm not a mathematician, but it would mean that your pregnancy took place in the pandemic.
Kind of works out that way.
Yeah, so you're not like one of those people who say, well, Jesus, I was pregnant, and now look at our pandemic, right?
Look what came upon.
Yeah, so you kind of ended up pregnant in the pandemic.
Yes, sir.
What were your greatest fears?
My greatest fears, well, first of all, I want to let the families of mm-hmm. those persons or children that may have passed during this whole episode know that every time I hear one of the stories, mm-hmm. I pray about it because my heart is grieved.
Wow.
So I pray for the family members.
Wow.
Now being, I'm not sure if I'm Church of God like you, but yeah. I think I have a little bit of church in me.
Oh, hallelujah.
So I wanted to also say that God's grace, mercy, and favor in bringing me through is not underestimated. I don't underestimate it, and I don't take it for granted. Mm-hmm. So I thank him for that.
Mm-hmm.
Not coming out of the hospital alive
mm-hmm.
or with my child was the absolute greatest fear.
Really?
It kept me up some nights until I got a grip on myself
mm-hmm.
and decided that, you know, whatever happens, I must trust that to be the will of God for my life. And I must trust that he will either keep me or take me.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you were what is it the church people say all the time? That if the Lord don't keep me, if the Lord don't, I remember
whom
it.
The Lord keep as well.
I remember it at some point, right? But was it a greater fear for you then that, which did you fear more? Did you fear losing your life more? Or did you wonder, what if I go in this hospital with a belly, but I come out with no baby? Which of the two fears were greater for you?
I'm not sure. I'd have to think about that. Mm. I've never thought about that. Both were absolute fears. But to tell you the truth, probably losing the child and still, while there's hope to do it again,
mm-hmm.
it's just having gone through the entire process,
mm-hmm.
having been depressed at the beginning, Mm-hmm. And then it finally growing on me to have to now come out after all of the celebration without a baby in my hand.
Right, because I don't think people ever consider the mental toll, right? Like, so you've had the shower, you know, you didn't do all the, ooh, nice.
Correct.
I'm never doing it, right? But now that you've already gone through all of that, you've already painted the room, who knows, you know, I don't know what your living accommodations are like, but you've probably already, you know, cut out some space for this baby.
Definitely.
And you put up the crib.
Yep.
And you didn't probably route a daddy because he's taking long to put the crib up. And now the crib is finally up and you didn't bought the car seat because you won't be responsible and you don't want to drive home from the hall. And so there is massive planning for the welcoming of a life.
Correct.
Right? Two of the most difficult things in life I think I've ever had to do was plan for a life to come, mm-hmm. and erase a life that's left, right? And I've been on both sides of the spectrum. But did the fear at any point ever come in your mind that if I buy all these things, if I do all of this preparation, we are in the height of a... Because you had your baby in the height of the second wave, yeah? Like, people were dropping down left, right, and center.
Third wave.
Right. People were dropping down. This was when the count started going all the way back.
All the way up. Every time you turned around.
Yeah, but did that ever make you melancholy to the point where you were like, okay, so maybe I shouldn't buy the car seat? Or maybe I... Because, I mean, these are real things. Did it ever occur to you?
It sure did. Mm-hmm. It sure did. Like I said, the fear of it kept me up at night. The fear of not having the child. And besides, like, having done all of the preparation, it's something that stays with you for the rest of your life, because mm-hmm. you're going to see persons that didn't know you lost a child.
Mm.
And they're going to say, oh, you had baby yet? You had boy or girl?
Yeah.
And then you have to say to them, well, find some way, some euphemism or whatever, to say the child passed away or the child didn't make it. Oh. And that, I think you kind of have to relive that experience over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. What about your attending, your doctor attending? Because, I mean... You took the private route.
Yes.
Full private. Man, just get yourself some good insurance, I tell you.
So, thank God for it.
So you are, and you happen to be in the insurance business, just as an FYI.
First of all, let's just be clear. Mm-hmm. It's general insurance, property and casualty, not life and health.
No, I agree.
Okay.
But you understand the value of insurance because that's
sure
the business
do,
you're
sure
in.
Sure do.
And so now you attending doctors, attending physicians. There's so many changes in the protocol. Like you said, this is your second child. I think that's 5 years prior, certainly before the pandemic anyway.
Yes.
What was the difference in the experience? I mean, with all of the new protocols, the closing of doctors' offices, the closing of pharmacies. How did that translate into your pregnancy situation?
At the beginning of the pregnancy... I'm thinking my doctor may have actually been out of office due to some exposure.
Mm.
Thankfully, her husband is also one of the best mm-hmm. doctors, obstetricians mm-hmm. on the island.
Okay.
So he filled in for her for a few months. I think it was like probably 3 or 4 of my visits.
Mm-hmm.
He was there. So that was good. But that's how it started off.
Mm-hmm.
As I went through the process, you know, it was, well, your husband can't come in with you.
Mm-hmm.
But thankfully, should I say this? He was able to be there when we determined or when they told us the gender of the child.
Okay.
But for a lot of, like, the scans, et cetera, when he probably would have been there, he was not there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why.
And it's because he couldn't come.
It was because he couldn't be there. He was actually sitting outside.
Right.
So that was one of the major ways because... Mm-hmm. I guess you like as much as possible for both parents to be involved in the experience.
Right.
Because when I left the office, I would then have to say, he would ask, well, what did the doctor
say? Right, now you had to recite all
so
of this medical stuff.
And my memory isn't the best. I'm about to be 40-something next week.
Right.
So, but I tried to...
40 mid-aught.
I tried to remember the salient points.
Okay.
So that I could point out, and if he had any questions, just to let him know. So we kind of both walked through the process together, although he was not actually there.
Did you ever... become alarmed that, okay, because, I mean, you're talking about going to doctor's hospital. If you know the process in the Bahamas, everyone wants to have their baby at BMH for one reason.
Mm-hmm.
If something happens to this baby in the delivery, y'all got to come to BMH in any event, right?
Yes.
Was that ever a concern for you?
It was.
Mm-hmm.
It was a concern, but I normally find peace in certain situations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, after I process it and I think about it, I will get religious and say I pray about it. Mm-hmm. But once I get that calm about it and there's no pressure, mm-hmm. then I say, you know, like I always say, God is in control. If something happens, they're going to have to rush the baby over. Mm-hmm. But I trust God to keep us through and to keep her healthy and whole.
Mm. Now, okay, so pregnancy happens. You're attending doctors. According to you, that was a wonderful experience. I tell you, it's not all bad, right? Like everything... Rome is not on fire here, you know, even though there's great dysfunction.
Right.
So you're not able to go to your actual physician, which could be stressful.
Let me just clarify that I actually went to her office. Mm-hmm. Her husband was working out of her office.
Yeah. But see, uh-huh. I've had this. Here's the thing. My doctor tries to do that to me sometimes. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, oh, you could just see one of the other physicians in my team of physicians. No. I want you to know my secrets.
Different story. He's seen me before. Even with my first pregnancy, okay, he was good. The one, perfect. You know, that told us.
Because I don't have to tell the secrets twice.
Exactly. And it's not like this absolute stranger that she's shoving me off to.
Okay, good. Okay? Perfect.
It's someone that I'm familiar with, I'm comfortable with.
Yeah. It's like when doctors ask me, how often do you drink that?
Don't you sure?
I mean, show me the boxes. I can see if one of these boxes look like me. But so you had to go to another physician. What was it like, you know, if you had to like get prescriptions and that kind of stuff? Was it difficult in the pandemic having to go through any of that?
No problem whatsoever.
No.
If I needed something, he wrote the prescription. Mm-hmm. I went to the pharmacy. And I collected the medication.
What about with pharmacies having fluctuating times, the long lines? Because but you didn't get pregnant that early in the pandemic.
I think while we were still in the pandemic, mm-hmm. and possibly in the height of the third wave, mm-hmm. the society was a bit more open.
Okay.
Like as opposed to having had to deliver early
April 2020.
March 2020, when everything was shut down. You had to wait on long lines. You didn't have access.
Mm-hmm.
This was different because the society was open.
Yeah,
it was basically the curfew.
Right.
The curfew was the only thing that was kind of hindering anything.
Right, because what happened when you want ice cream 1 o'clock in the morning?
You can't get it. You better pray you bought the Haagen-Dazs and it's in the deep freeze.
Yeah. Okay, so you did your pharmacies. That was all perfect. What about labs? Did you do labs? Was any of that difficult?
I did labs, and the most difficult part about it was the fact that they want to take 10 vials of blood from you at one time. There was one experience where I think I had to do my glucose test.
Mm-hmm.
And with my first child, after I drank the liquid that they give you,
mm-hmm.
I was able to, you know, go back to the office, work, and then come back, mm-hmm. and let them monitor the sugar. This time I had to sit in that building for I think 2 hours,
mm-hmm.
and go through that. That was the only
right, but it's because if they let you leave, you know, they don't know what you'd be exposed to, et cetera,
Well, they were because of the state. If there was a spike in the blood,
mm-hmm.
Something could have happened in transit to or from. So they wanted to prevent that and they wanted to keep me there.
Mm. Okay, so now that you've gotten past that, it stays now before the delivery of the baby. I imagine you went in a private vehicle.
Yes,
I did. So there wasn't no ambulance ride. You're checking in, but again, COVID is around the time, because if I remember correctly, I think you delivered your child around the time when Doctors Hospital had began to say, listen, we running out of space, we running out of oxygen.
Correct.
Don't come here.
Correct.
How did that play in your mind when you think about the fact as somebody that is insured, that is going to a private facility, that, wait a minute, even if I have an emergency, I may not be able to be tended to or get adequate care. How did that factor in your thoughts?
I think that was a general fear. I mean, whether I was pregnant or not, that would have been a general fear. Because while we do the best and the most that we can,
mm-hmm.
to prevent infection, some persons, I think, still don't know how they got infected.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a general fear. Having become pregnant and having to be admitted to deliver the child, like I said, the fear, I don't know if it was magnified, but I do know, like I said previously, that the fear of the entire thing kept me up some nights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some nights about for a week or two, I would be up in the night, mildly sweating, with heart palpitations, just thinking about it. But trust in God.
When you heard that people were actually going into the hospital, mm-hmm. and not dying, but coming out with COVID. Or I even heard a story where they said the baby the baby had COVID. I can't figure if the only thing the baby touched.
We must consider who touched the baby.
What touched the baby? Because the baby come out the chute, it couldn't come out with COVID. How did the baby get COVID, right? Mm-hmm. Did you ever wonder to yourself, well, what if I catch COVID? Well, what if I get COVID and my baby don't have COVID? Or, well, how would I be able to touch my baby? Are they going to keep me away from my child?
Correct.
What were the kind of thoughts after you've been admitted? They got you all hooked up and you're thinking about the next 24 or 36 hours. Is that the most frightening period there for you?
It wasn't a frightening period for me, and that may have been because I had already processed my fear. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that on that morning, everything just was bam in front of my face and the fear overcame me. Mm-hmm. So I think because I had already processed it, I didn't go through that anymore. Mm-hmm. But the thoughts were still there because it was, well, who would actually care for the child if I couldn't care for the child? Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the major things for me. If something did happen to me, mm-hmm. if I was the person that had COVID or did not leave the hospital, mm-hmm. then, like, who would I leave? Not only this child, but my other child, who would I leave them in the care of? Who would take care of my children? Who would love them as much as I love them? Who would ensure that they're not abused? You know, who would do that? And that is something, it's heart-wrenching.
Mm. What would you say has been the most different experience? Because you've had baby pre-COVID and you've had baby during COVID. If you had to compare the two, what was the most difficult or difference between your pre-COVID baby and your in-COVID baby? It's very interesting that y'all
pre-COVID
still,
and in-COVID. Yeah.
It's interesting also that y'all make babies in the pandemic. That was also
why is it interesting? There are not many other things to do, and that stuff is fun. It's fun, so it's gonna get done.
You know, you could order a pizza. You know, you could watch Netflix. I don't know if making baby was at the top of the list of things I wanted to get. You could drink some gin, whatever you want to do, just not make a baby. But what was the differences between, again, the pre-COVID baby and in-COVID baby?
The difference to me was mainly the company, like the persons that could come and visit you and keep you going for those 2.5, 3, however long you're in the hospital. Mm-hmm. That human contact, that human connection,
yeah.
that's been missing, I think, from society since March 2020. Mm-hmm. And as a pregnant woman who has a lot of hormones running through her body, who kind of often may get depressed or feel overwhelmed, is like, while you could call people and talk to people, there was no human presence there. As you know, you can just look at your friend's eye and they could see you crying. You may not say it, mm-hmm. but they could look at you and tell something wrong. And that's a feeling that is not normally transmitted through a WhatsApp call, you know, or through a telephone call. They mm-hmm. could hear in your voice. You say, oh, I'm good. I'm doing well.
Yeah.
But if they were there, they could see, they could read your whole expression.
Yeah, yeah.
Shakara needs me right now, but she's just not saying it. Mm-hmm. So I think the whole human interaction was the major thing that was missing for me.
Hmm. Did you ever wonder to yourself, well, when you had your baby, did they, you know, they do this little process where they take the baby out of the room and then you see the baby like 2 hours later or something like that. Did you go through that process?
First of all, I had a C-section. So, you know, you're able to, you kind of can look over if you're alert enough.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the child.
Oh, you did local anesthetics?
Yeah.
Oh, you're the killer.
I'm a soldier. you look over, you can see the child.
Uh-huh.
You may hear a cry, but uh-huh. You're not fully aware of anything, but you just kind of know that you did that. So that was the process.
So you're awake, mm-hmm. they're taking the baby out of you, bam, the baby goes across the room. How long before they bring the baby back? Because you're in a COVID environment, I imagine you're thinking, well, Jesus, why are they taking this long? Does the baby have COVID? Where the nurse? Does the nurse have COVID? Where's the doctor? Did the doctor have COVID?
I was not worried at all, simply because I was looking forward to a bit of rest. But after the surgery, I went into the recovery room for a few minutes. Experience completely different than my first child, and it may have been because of the anesthetic that was used.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. When I was walking past the nursery, don't let me get the people in trouble. While I was being escorted to mm-hmm. my room past mm-hmm. the nursery, I kind of looked over to see her. And after that, I went to the room. I don't think I saw her until the following day. She didn't come in the room, but I wasn't worried about her.
Mm.
I was trying to sleep.
Mm.
Yeah.
So now you get discharged. How long does that take?
The discharge, well, I had my daughter early September 28th. That was a Tuesday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I was discharged Thursday afternoon.
So about 48 hours.
Yeah, 48 hours. Roughly.
Okay, you're coming outside now. You've got your new baby. You know, I've seen all sorts of incredible blogs about the granddaddy. Them when see the baby, they got to look through the window and all kind of things. The little brother and sister want to see the baby, but you can't let them in the nursery and all kind of other nonsense. What are some of the strongest thoughts in your mind? Being a Bahamian, knowing... Listen, everyone got to see the baby. Grammy them have to see the baby right away because we need to know if the baby have a short toe, if the baby got a bite of theirs, because we need to verify these things, right? The baby is now born. You're on your way out of the hospital. I imagine, again, by private car. What are the things that are going through your mind after 9 months of minimal human reaction, minimal moments of affection, minimal family support during your time of pregnancy? What exactly is happening?
Let me first of all say, I think the fact that my mother could not come to that hospital killed her. I think that actually did something to her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could.
Grammys
I could,
have to come.
Yeah, that absolutely killed her inside. But after I was discharged, we went straight to where she was.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't hold the baby,
mm-hmm.
But she was able to see.
To look for ears. Let me see ears.
She was able to see her.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. That kind of satisfied that for a while.
Okay.
She did come to the house later. Of course, it was iffy because it was like, well, I'll hold the baby today. You can mm-hmm. be in the house. I'll hold the baby today for you to see her, but mm-hmm. you cannot hold her.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you know, if there was a visitor, there were only two. You mask up.
Mm-hmm.
You put on hand sanitizer.
Mm-hmm.
You hold.
See, that's why I ain't coming to see nobody, baby.
You hold for a few seconds, and that's only for grandmother and grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no one else.
Mm-hmm.
You hold for a few seconds. You kiss your grandchild goodbye.
Oh, you get a kiss
later.
Too? Okay.
No, not a literal kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Later, and you'll see the photos.
So then, what do you think mothers that have had children in? Because that's not necessarily the way Bahamians ride. Like. We have the baby Monday, Wednesday, we need to go run, we got to cycle the block. If you come from a family like mine, everybody got to see the baby. We want to know if the baby got the airs, right? And so now we got to go to my auntie house, and then you got to go, because that's kind of who we are. We are, for whatever, no matter what you believe, we are still a little village, right?
Yes.
And so we need to go by this one, because this one got to see the baby, and girl, I got a baby. Well, how come you had baby and you ain't bring baby for me to see? And you have to do that. That is
correct.
A part of the culture.
Correct.
After having two children in two different times, one in this very COVID time, because like I said, if you're just following, I'm talking to Ms. Shikara Moxie. We're doing my series. It's called Pregnant in the Pandemic. She, unlike my last week guest, has had a remarkable experience in our healthcare facility, albeit the private one. But many of the horror stories that we hear are real. But there are people that have had wonderfully pleasant experiences. And I'm hopeful that I give... those people on the front line a bit of accolades to let them know that, you know, they're just not all frittering away their
correct.
Opportunity
correct.
To be meaningful in the lives of people. Because those people matter. The nurse, the doctor,
correct.
they matter to you in that moment because of what it is that they're doing. And so I say to those people, thank you all for what it is that you
thank
do,
you.
Whether
absolutely.
In the public or private. But you've had pre-COVID baby, you've had in-COVID baby. Is it okay if I call them both that? I think I've already done it. So
too late.
How does the culture of child rearing, particularly in the early days, how is that now playing for you in this COVID environment? Like, do you want to get out the car and take the baby somewhere? When the crazy fella from Guardian invites you on his show, do you say to yourself, come where? I ain't I. How is that playing out in your mind now as a new parent again in this kind of atmosphere?
Okay, first of all, you mentioned something about support earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The support hasn't changed.
Okay.
It's just the present. So let me make that clear.
Mm-hmm.
My support has been 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Church, job, family, everyone has been totally supportive. It's just the presence
mm-hmm.
that made the difference.
Sure.
And that's the thing, because I feel that persons, you feel that they want to be there as well. It's hurting them almost just as much, mm-hmm. or even more than it's hurting you, mm-hmm. because they want to be there. They want you to know that, hey, they love this child too, that they're here to support you. They're here to support your child, and they want to do as much as they can to help you.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, we have to be wise, and mm-hmm. we have to determine what risks we're going to take.
Okay.
And all of them we're not going to take. So they understand. Everyone has been quite understanding. Some mm-hmm. persons have even said, well, I ain't coming around you now, so don't look for me. If you need something, I can leave it
Call
on
me,
the
I
porch.
Can drop it on the gate.
I can leave it on the porch. Mm-hmm. I'll pull off, and you can get it. Mm-hmm. So everyone's been supportive because everyone understands what we're in.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been no kickback. Everyone understands.
All right, let's take a little break. When we get back, I want to talk to you because you're talking about adults. You live in the house with a toddler.
True.
And I can tell you now, because I have toddlers, there are no rules for them.
None at all.
Do not jump off the stairs means jump from the top one.
The top one.
Yeah, that's what it typically means for toddlers. And face-to-face school is going to be happening. All these things are going to be happening. Big sister won't understand, I can't touch the baby.
She will not.
All right? And so we got to talk about that, figure that out, and see what it is like trying to parent, new parents particularly, in this COVID environment. What has COVID done? We're talking about pregnancy in the pandemic. I'm Levin Millett, Guardian Radio. Don't move. I've got more show planned.
At Fidelity, the holidays are all about family, spending time with loved ones, and being thankful for the little things in life. Worrying about bills should be the last thing on your mind, especially during the holidays. Let Fidelity help you get your bills under control. Fidelity can also get you started with a real savings plan that actually pays you interest. The only thing you need to think about is what you will do with the savings in your pocket this Christmas. Now that's what I'm talking about. Fidelity Bank is here for you this holiday season because you are family, and family is important to us.
COVID-19. Do not panic. Be prepared. Some persons may get worried and feel stressed whenever there's an outbreak of diseases like COVID-19. Do not panic. It is better to be informed and prepared. Talk to a healthcare professional about your concerns. Make a plan for how you will keep your home and workspace clean and disinfected. Practice proper hygiene and preventative actions such as proper hand washing and coughing and sneezing etiquette. Stay informed about local COVID-19 updates from trusted and reliable sources.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
Welcome back. Thank you for staying with me. I'm Levin Millett. It's Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. That means I'm unleashed on your radio, and then that means it's somewhere between 11 and 12 o'clock. I'm in studio. Miss Shikara Moxie is my guest. We're talking. We're finishing my series. It's going to be going on for a bit, so I think I got three more of these planned. Pregnant in the pandemic, right? And we have gone through the process of the pregnancy, the process of the doctoring. We've gone through the process of the actual having of the baby and the taking the baby home, and we've gone through... What does that mean? What does it look like as a society? How has her village responded to it? But there is someone in your village that I imagine is crucially important to you. And what is her name?
Jalia.
Little Jalia, right?
Little
and
Jalia.
You keep telling me about all these rules, but I am willing to wager that those rules don't apply to her. Because I understand the way children work, right? When they come... You get to think you in charge, and then you one day realize that you know something, these children in charge. And you just let them do whatever they want to do, and you buffer them and hope to God they don't
Correct.
Kill themselves, right?
Correct.
That's kind of what parenting is. I tell you, it's interesting. But she's about to go back to school, because face-to-face is about to start again in January. By January, you will have a two-month-old. Of course, a little less susceptible to... whatever babies are susceptible to, but still a very young baby. How do you think that's going to work out with sibling interaction?
First of all, my daughter has been in school since September.
Oh, bless
my
Jesus.
4-year-old. So mm-hmm. she hasn't, they haven't missed a beat.
Mm-hmm.
They have been face to face.
Okay.
Before I delivered, anyone will tell you, she kind of kept persons away from my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was like, that's her sister, her mm-hmm. big sister,
yeah.
and she's not going to let anyone take her sister away
yeah.
from her. And that's been, I guess, her crowning glory ever since I brought the baby home. But like you said, it's difficult because I don't want her to feel as if I'm concentrating on this newborn and not paying any attention to her.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways that I figure I have to do that is by allowing her to be involved in taking care as much as she can of this newborn baby.
Mm-hmm.
She's very affectionate towards the child. Mm-hmm. She tries to be. She wants to kiss her on the face, kiss her on the hand. She wants to play with her. She wants to help me when I give her a bath.
Mm-hmm.
I try to set a little routine for her.
Okay.
And it's that, okay, as soon as you get either in the vehicle or in the house, you sanitize your hands. Because I know I'm not going to be able to keep you from touching this child. And it would only make you feel like I'm paying more attention to this child or I love this child more if I kind of keep you away, keep her in a capsule. So she sanitizes her hands. And then there's a rule now where she only kisses her belly. But of course, that doesn't work all the time because she's still trying to kiss her hand or hold her hand or touch her face. But she's doing better now. She's since gotten a grasp the concept that you definitely cannot kiss her face.
Okay.
Do not kiss her face. Do not touch her face. The hand thing, we're still working on. But I'm just trying to work it out, like I said, where she doesn't feel as if I'm only paying attention to this new child now. And it's no longer about her.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's the baby. What about the daddy? Because, you know, daddies are daddies, right? And I can tell you I have a little bit of practice being a daddy. So, you know, sometimes daddies have machoism, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, doctor could tell me what to do. Who baby this is? This my baby or the doctor baby? What the doctor mean? Don't touch the baby. How the baby getting there? Okay, good.
Someone got touched.
Right, so... So, daddies, I understand, or I believe, could sometimes be a bit difficult to monitor, particularly in a COVID environment. Now, I get it. Daddies don't want to harm the child.
Correct.
But daddies ain't into all the rules either. Like,
daddies can't harm the children. What are we talking
about? Yeah, what the doctor mean, I can't touch my baby. That don't make sense to me. How exactly is that? Like, what exactly, and you probably don't know because it's third-party information, because he would have to say, but what exactly has been his involvement? Like, is it apprehension? Is it, no, it's the same as when we had the first child. He's huggy and kissy, and because I imagine he still has to go to work.
Correct.
And then you don't really know who he works around.
Correct.
And then you kind of like, you know, spray with a little Lysol at the door.
Yeah.
What has that been like for you, and how has that interaction been?
Well, first of all, I can tell you what he does when I'm around.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm not there, I don't know what
all the rules go out the door. I can tell you that now.
Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
But as a responsible adult,
mm-hmm.
I can trust that he will, it appears as if he does, you know, what is necessary in terms of when he comes home, shoes are off, you know, clothes are off,
mm-hmm.
you take a shower, you come, you play with the child. He told me he said the other day that he only kisses her stomach the mm-hmm. same way. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know if he just said that so that our four-year-olds can kind of follow that pattern.
More than likely.
I don't know. But everyone understands the situation. We understand the risk. We understand what's going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's doing his best to be cautious as well. But
Has it caused apprehension though? Like, is he like, I don't really want to touch the baby? Because, you know, like when I had my son, Alexandria, mm-hmm. right? I remember like, you know, I was a new daddy. This baby was so small, and like he would turn his head so slowly. He had a big head, right? And he would turn his head so slowly, and I'd be like, is he gonna be okay? I don't wanna break this baby. And so I was a bit apprehensive, but of course, by the time as I, you know, became accustomed, and oh yeah, his head won't drop off, it's gonna be okay. Yeah, we was having, like, they would have to pull me back and say, hey, that's still a baby, you know, like you're being a little rough. Is there any apprehension on his part?
The only apprehension that I see mm-hmm. is apprehension to change a diaper.
Mm-hmm. All daddies have that apprehension.
And I think that's only because daddy doesn't want to do it.
International daddy apprehension.
There's no other apprehension.
Yeah.
He comes, he takes the child, he plays with her. I'm trying to figure out if this child loves him more than she loves me. Because, I mean,
that's typical.
She would stay in my arms crying. But when daddy comes and rescues her,
mm-hmm.
silent and asleep.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. They may have something going on there.
Mm-hmm.
But
let me read a couple of these text messages. I want to get these. And I saw somebody call on the phone lines. You could call back 323-622-3232-54316. 325-4259. People say I say that too fast. I'll say it again. 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259. I see you looking at me, which means you wondering if I'm actually... Yes, I've remembered them. The text line is 422-4796. And this is what I tell people. The reason I can't say the numbers slowly is because I have applied them to the same part of my brain that I've put A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. Try saying the alphabet and see how difficult it is.
True.
This one here says, good morning. Good show. An honest, brave guest lady. Mr. Miller, you said you have toddlers, but what about a wife? You brag about being a Church of God man, but as Warren McCartney mentioned yesterday, you can't speak to marriage or family life unless you are one yourself. And that's the right way. What is the band-aid really giving me a schooling? Righteousness is God's way. Matthew 6:33. Okay, no problem. Well, since you like scripture.
Oh boy.
I got one
Church
for you.
Church of God boy.
I got one
Church
for you.
Church of God boy.
This one is 2 Corinthians 12:7. It says, unless I should be exalted above measure, through the abundance of the revelations, there was given me a thorn in my flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. And so I tell people I believe one of the things God gave me to keep me, because other than that, I would want to be the Pope. If you see I could have lived without the things in my life, the demons that haunt me wear jogging tennis.
Oh, Lord.
All right? And so I try it. I waken on it, though. But this must be the thorn. This must be. Let's take this one call. Good morning, caller. You're on. And I bring this wonderful guest here. Y'all still won't kiss me out, man.
Lord of mercy.
Morning, caller. You're on.
Morning, sir.
Hey, how are you?
Fine, thank you. It's the first time I call your show, but I forgot. I really wasn't supposed to call your show. I was supposed to call Miss Green's show. But I work with her father, I think, and her aunt, one of her aunts, at tourism. But I enjoy your show all the time, sir.
Okay.
I don't know your guest's name, but anyhow, you said you are a member of the Church of God of Prophecy?
No. We was Church of God in Christ.
I think my Bishop Enos, and your Bishop Moss, I thought maybe we had the same brotherliness. But anyhow, I would keep quiet and listen to your show, sir.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yes, I always love talking to good Church of God people.
One for us.
And let me also say this. I heard an interview yesterday with a mentor of mine, one of my distant mentors, the Reverend Dr. Terrence Gerada Morrison, right? And I learned something yesterday about him that I didn't know. You know that he grew up in the Catholic Church. I always knew that.
Okay,
and you could tell from his mannerisms that Catholicism is obviously somewhere in there. Because he has very polished practices in the clergy, right?
Okay.
But I only yesterday learned that he used to sneak out of Our Lady's and go up the road
to the prevailing
Church of God. It's no wonder this boy got fire and brimstone like this. I couldn't believe it.
He couldn't miss it.
I said, no, I keep wondering where this Baptist pastor get all this fire and brimstone from. And then it hit me. I said, my goodness. The man say he used to tiptoe out of Our Ladies, right? Our Ladies of the Saints, I think he said that's what is the name of the church. And on Sundays, because, you know, prevailing could be going on long after Our Ladies then finish, he would find himself over by the prevailing Church of God. Under the auspices at that time of Bishop George Burns. George Livingston Burns was the bishop of that church. This text right here says, great show as usual. People want to see the baby just to make sure.
What did I want to make sure of?
That is the baby, I guess. That's a behavior thing. You know, the baby got to have you. The baby got granddaddy toe? No, mommy. You know, there are many people involved here, right? This is my, what and who put this curse on you? What is these babies will be motionless in this bio? I don't know what's happening here. Okay, these are some crazy people. the numbers are 323. You know, I can't read some of this stuff, right? Like, this is crazy stuff. 323-6232-325-4316, 325-4259. Pregnancy in the pandemic, Ms. Shikara Moxie. What was working like as a pregnant woman in the pandemic? You know, you need all of the extra precautions. you know, they want your test to come in the office and da 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 day. Was that any different?
Let me start by
saying... Did you use any pregnant woman privileges?
I'm not going to say that. but let me start by saying that during my pregnancies, the two that I've had so far, mm-hmm. I'm always so extremely far. Tired.
Okay.
Extremely tired. For the first one, it was only like for the first trimester. Mm-hmm. But for this pregnancy, it seemed as if that fatigue and that exhaustion mm-hmm. like lasted for the entire duration of the pregnancy.
Okay.
So the whole routine of getting up in the morning and getting dressed and getting your toddler prepared for school and going into the office and being alert and attentive enough to work, that got difficult.
What about workspace protocol?
Workspace protocol is pretty much as it is everywhere. You enter the office, you sanitize your hands, your temperature is red. Mm-hmm. They put up the glass, the protective glass around the work area.
Didn't make it too difficult.
No, wasn't difficult at all. Wasn't difficult at all.
Let's see what this caller wants to say. Good morning, caller. Hopefully you were listening to my show and want to talk about things that we're talking about. Are you there?
Morning, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
There's something I want to ask you if I can.
Go ahead, sure.
Why do they call you leashed?
Huh?
And the rest are unleashed?
Well, that's the name of my show. That's the name of my show. I actually picked it, to be quite honest. Is he there? I think we lost the call. Yeah, so workplace protocols wasn't too difficult. You give me a call back, 323-623-2354-316-325-4259. Or you can text me on 422-4796. What was that?
Wasn't difficult at all.
Oh. What would you say was the most difficult? Well, first of all, you're a woman over 40 that had a child.
Thanks.
But you said that earlier.
I did.
Right? So I'm just recanting.
I did.
Right, so you're a woman over 40 that had it, which is an anomaly in itself.
In itself, yes.
What would you say was the most difficult part of being pregnant? Because you had a wonderful time. So what was the most absolute, oh my God, I do not want to go through this again, ever again moment in your pregnancy during the pandemic? You didn't have one?
The most difficult moment for me, it was a mild one, and it goes back to the fatigue. The fatigue, because I'm used to being this active, bouncy kind of person, and with pregnancy I'm just like so tired. It's like I'm pushing to do everything. I don't have that usual burst of energy because I like to be, you mm-hmm. know, Miss Happy, mm-hmm. energetic. So the fatigue and the nausea without being nauseous, okay. I don't know if that made sense, but
okay.
It's completely annoying. And that was the most difficult part, besides, as I mentioned earlier, the whole lack of human interaction.
Let's take another one of these calls. Good morning, caller, you're on.
Hey,
what's up?
I want to say congratulations to the beautiful lady
that is
in front of you. Mm-hmm. I see her beauty because of what she has done, what she brought from heaven.
Mm.
You know, at her age, you know, I was born to my mom at the age of 45.
Yeah.
And my dad was 50.
Bless the Lord.
There's eight more after me.
Jesus,
you know, and
what?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Yes, they had 18 children.
Goodness,
same mother, same father, and they were Baptist.
Oh, bless
you. That's a part of it. And once again, ma'am, congratulations. You've got courage. Enjoy.
Thank you, caller. I was about to ask how you knew I was beautiful, but I guess you said it.
Well, listen, because you tap into heaven.
Oh, glory.
The man said you tap into heaven and bring something down.
Oh,
heaven.
Glory.
Okay, so now that you're going to be raising a very new baby in what is still considered the early days of the pandemic, they are actually now talking about strain 4. Mm. Of the variant, I don't remember this one name. They have the all kind of Delta, Gamma, one bunch of variants, right? What makes you fearful now? Because there will come a time when you have to return to work, right? I think in about another 7 weeks, maybe.
Yep.
Yeah, right? I wish I was a mommy sometimes, right? You'll have to go back to work in about 7 weeks. Possibly by then, we will be having another outbreak. The more they tear this economy open, the more there will be hot spots and outbreaks. Does that make you cringe any at all?
I cringe.
Mm-hmm.
And the fear is a general fear that I have about parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot protect your child 100% of the time.
Mm.
You do all that you can to teach them, you know, best practices,
mm-hmm.
To ensure that you've done what they need, or you've given them what they need. But you can't protect them, and you have to let them go mm-hmm. and let them be free. So that's the biggest fear. Like, she has to be in this world, and she has to be exposed. Like, I can't keep her in the house forever.
Right.
I have to now start going places, because the house is kind of starting to drive me crazy a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't.
Do you think it'll be like? So I imagine that all parents have the all mothers. I'm advised have this thing where, when the baby born, I kind of really don't want to leave my baby, right? When it's time to go back to work. But is it going to be? Do you think that's going to be exacerbated this time?
I think it's going to be a little. It's going to be less.
Because you're not new at this, so you know what it is you would do. Who the baby can go to, where the baby can go. This ain't like the first one where you have to think about, well, where do I want the baby to be? But this is a new world.
Correct.
Does that factor in your thoughts?
It does.
Mm-hmm.
With my first child, I cried when I left her. I don't know if I'm going
to
cry.
Were you like one of those mummies who walk in the baby to school, and while the baby going, the baby ain't crying, the mummy crying?
Of course, you got the tears streaming down.
Oh, God, mothers are so
mean. I don't think this, in terms of that part of it, I don't think this one is going to be the same, because, okay. I mean, I know the people, I trust the people, they've cared for my four-year-old, they continue to care for her, and mm-hmm. I trust that they will do the same for this little one. But the fear is there. Besides COVID, and of course that's a major concern. I mean, you're hearing stories every day about what's happening to children in preschools, in families, you know, with strangers. You just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The children are going to be in this world, and it's a fear. It's something that you have to process, as you normally do, and you do the best that you can to work it out and become satisfied with whatever position you decide to take.
Mm. Now, this is totally out of left wing. I imagine the pandemic will be with us always, like the poor. They probably will stop calling it a pandemic at some mm-hmm. point. That don't mean it'll go anywhere.
A lot of mercy.
But the caller just now said that, you know, his baby had about 45. I mean, you plan to have more children anytime during this pandemic?
Why do you want to do that to me?
I just asked it. I asked it. Look, the caller opened that window.
Let me give a bit of history.
You look strong.
Let me give a bit of history before I do this. As a young girl, I wanted to have 10 children.
Bless Jesus.
As I got older, I didn't want to have any children.
Mm.
Up until probably, I don't know, seven, 8 years into marriage, I decided, okay, I probably need to have one.
Yeah.
And, you know, my slogan then was one and done.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's it. I'm over. No
you
more children.
You wanted to be the one-hit wonder of the world.
Exactly. I have this one. I can say, I've had a child. I'm going to do my best with her. And she's going to have the best. She's going to do the best. Mm-hmm. She's going to be the best. And then comes number two. I'm no longer saying one and done, of course.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying, child, whatever the Lord's will?
I've always been saying that. I started to take precautions against it, but, you know, something happened along the way.
Mm.
I ended up with two. At this point, I don't know if I want to take any permanent measures. Let me put it like that.
All right. Well, that's our time. I thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
To the text writer that will know why I got children and I ain't got no wife, listen, pray my strength in the Lord, but I won't leave you. 2 Corinthians 12:6-8. For though I would desire to glory, I shall not be a fool, for I will say the truth. But now I forbear, lest any man should think of me above that which he seeth me to be, or that he heareth of me. It then goes on to say, unless I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan, to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. And then he goes on in King James to say, and I'm ending right here, for this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart me. I'm Levin Miller. It's Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. They're a station for fresh news and smart talk, so don't move. They've got the news, and that's now.
Just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walked through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up.